Hey, babes, it's Dennis Miller here. You know, I promised I was going to wait till Wednesday to come up with some choice zingers for Michelle Wolf and her catastrophe of a White House correspondent dinner speech. But I just got out of my sensory deprivation tank like Will Hurt in Altered States. And I got some new ideas here, some good jokes for you. I haven't seen a wolf that bad since Lon Chaney Jr. went strolling in a Scottish moor. Seriously, though, I haven't seen someone bomb that bad since George Matetsky went to Radio City Music Hall. Seriously, though, Michelle Wolf makes L'Epidemane look like Molière. I mean, I don't want to go off on a rant here, but that routine is more poorly received than Senor Wences performing at a La Raza Cinco de Mayo. Michelle Wolf is basically Axis Sally meets Loretta Lockhorn with a sprinkling of Pia Zadora. She's the least funny canine since they remade the Shaggy Dog with Tiny Tim. I mean, this chick, she reminds me of Barry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe, Rosenberg,
okay,
Bob,
all right. Ray. No, Dennis, yeah.
We don't want to get him, you know, overheated. Where is the Dennis cooling fan? Dennis is powered by an AMD processor, so he constantly shuts down.
Miller coolant system, go.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? Should we start the show?
Yeah.
Hey, babe, that was easy. That made the Maginot line look like a deli line, the way you got around that.
Well, so we're back now. It's your Chapo for the week, but this is a sort of a special episode because this is like pure old school Chapo, and I don't just mean that the audio is bad.
Although that too, yes.
Yeah, that as well. But this is not just the old original lineup of Chapo, but the original recording technique of not being in the same room and talking to each other over the phone. So, Felix, Matt, great to be here with you guys again, talking on Google Hangout, back where it all began.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Inspiring.
God's plan.
Yeah, well, we've had a busy weekend. Show's coming to you a little bit late, although we've kept you stocked with all that bonus content, Virgil interviewing various politicians, but... Felix, you and Virgil have been away this weekend. Care to tell us where you were and why?
We received an award from the Yale Daily Record for outstanding achievement in satire.
Really?
Wow.
What did you guys do? So this was for 2017, right?
Guys, Matt's mic just cut out while he was saying something derogatory. Can we get a Matt's bitter grapes going in the chat? Can we get Matt stomping on his hat and shooting his two revolvers in the air going in the chat? Can we get never recognized by the best Ivy League university in the best country in America at Yale, Connecticut, New York City, New York, USA going in the chat?
I'm just asking questions. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're just asking questions like, for instance, why you and Virgil received a comedy award from Yale for your work for Carl Digler and Chapo Trap House, and I did not.
Or me.
I mean, that's an important question. I mean, less important is whether Matt got one or not, but why am I not humorous of the year?
I think it's not more important, but whatever. The question still stands.
I talked to them about it. First of all, they decided that Matt and Amber were too lowborn. Sorry. not my choice. And B, like, Will, you did meet the genetic breeding requirements that, you know, thankfully been opened up to, you know, Jews and Southeast Asians the last few years. But because of a weird Menaker family grudge against Yale, you were not allowed in. I'm sorry.
It's the old agency drama, I see.
Yeah. Yep. The descendants of James Jesus Angleton were not going to let that happen.
Yeah. We see... Hey, what happened was one of Will's 75 uncles who worked for the KGB. They angered the Yale CIA alumni at the annual KGB CIA Beer League softball tournament by cheating. And so Will was, you know, all their progeny was erased from receiving any Yale related reward. So I don't make the rules. I just benefit from them and will never allow them to change them.
Well, congratulations to Virgil and yourself for such a prestigious recognition and honor. Again, Yale University, waiting for your call, but I'm definitely happy for, you know, you and Virgil. I mean, that's the most important thing.
Hey, babe, do you hear that Matt and Will got an award from Outstanding Satire Writing from Hamburger U?
What's Hamburger U?
The McDonald's Training Academy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'll accept any award at this point. I just want to be recognized.
We can have an award ceremony on the Twitch stream.
Okay. So essentially, you'd be giving me an award on behalf of me?
Yes. Well, it's going to be a ranked member of the show award. I'm obviously awarding myself number one. But, you know, it's a race for number two. And I will be grading all of you. The grading's already begun. And we'll see. You know, we'll see who's put in the best effort.
Well, I'll just console myself with my Mensa membership. It's coming in the mail next week. I gave them the $500, and they're going to send me my very own certificate.
Oh, yeah, you think that's cool, dude? I'm a member of the Church of Satan. Do I scare you?
Epic win, sir.
Oh, yeah, does it trigger you that we don't break any laws or do anything, and we just dress up like vampires and, you know, recite readings from Ayn Rand and are just no different than Paul Ryan, except we drink wine that we put food coloring in?
Look, you have not read Ron Paul talking about End the Fed unless you've done it nude in a room full of other naked, sweaty people. That's the only way it was meant to be read.
Why is the Church of Satan back in the news?
Because they posted a rage comic in 2018. So fucking tight.
It's back in the Felix news.
Yeah, I've always loved the Church of Satan because they like made their branding to do epic Twitter clapbacks. Like when someone would be like, Donald Trump is Satan, they'd be like, we are not affiliated with him. And like, you know, someone would be like, oh, Justin Bieber is worse than a Satan worshiper. And they would go, fake news. And it was just totally epic. And people just thought it was like a goofy Twitter thing. But no, the Church of Satan is real. They are all like bald guys with goatees who read aloud from the fountainhead. And right as the hook to Dracula comes on, they slam the book shut and start dancing and playing with devil sticks. And if you don't think that's fucking cool, it's not for you. Little on this world or underworld is. if you don't take the Kate Beckinsale epic Underworld, the Underworld trilogy, and recut it to be about OSHA regulations, you're not ready for this.
Well, you guys were, you and Virgil were away getting an award. I hope you guys were on your best behavior as well. You know, I don't want to going around that, you know, our partying hijinks, you know, upset any of the prestigious stiff upper lip types at Ivy League University. Like, you know, I hope you weren't behaving like the Marx Brothers or, for instance, you know, ashing cigars into the blouse of a wealthy dowager or anything like that.
Oh, I did a classic prank, you know, from movies like Animal House, Revenge of the Nerds, and I sent a very credible bomb threat to the dean.
Yeah, they did that in Horse Feathers.
Yeah, that's right.
You guys were collecting an award. I guess the thing that happened this weekend, I didn't even know it was happening until I saw everyone talking about it. And then it was just like, oh, God. I guess we're going to have to talk about this. The White House Correspondents' Dinner happened this weekend. Nerd prom.
Gotta love it, brother.
I was really hoping it would just pass completely unremarked upon, but that wasn't the case because, you know, the comedian they booked, Michelle Wolf of The Daily Show, The headlines the last 48 hours, just nonstop debate about whether it was whether she was mean to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, whether it's okay to be mean to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, what is comedy, are comedians heroes, and should the whole White House Correspondents' Dinner be hit with Agent Orange?
You know, living in hell is a lot more boring than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's just this is a conversation that is designed to dominate everything on your social media and like in the news and the news media talking about itself and entertainment. And just like, I want to turn it all off. I don't care. I don't care about any of it. It's just like anyone taking just like a really, really hard stance on any of this is just, I just don't know what to make of it.
Well, the most insane thing is that, as they say on Battlestar Galactica, all of this has happened before and all of this will happen again. Because this same fucking debate happened, people have pointed this out, the same thing happened 10 years ago with Colbert when he was at the Correspondents' Dinner, I believe 2006, and he roasted Bush to his face and everyone was horrified and there was a whole debate about did he go too far? Is there such a thing as too far? What are comedians supposed to do? But real heads know that this actually also happened 20 years ago. Because in 1996, Don Imus was the comic at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and he did a bunch of jokes about how Bill Clinton was a horny freak, and that caused the giant wailing and gnashing of teeth. There was no Twitter, but if there had been, everyone would have lost their shit. It's the same fucking argument over and over, and nothing ever changes about it. It's enough to make you go insane, because since Trump's been elected, every bit of real estate in the op-ed world has been elite media people worrying about the free exchange of ideas. Oh no, the Twitter hordes and the campus PC police are going to get rid of free speech. We're not going to be able to exchange ideas. We're not going to be able to have a marketplace of free expression anymore. I mean, forget the fact that we've got a domestic Gestapo running around in ICE or Gilded Age level inequality or an impending climate catastrophe that could end all fucking life on Earth. The only thing that matters to these people is whether or not we have enough of a safe realm for respectful debate. Because, according to these people, we can't solve any of these problems unless we have a public debate that can reason out our differences and lead us to a Habermasian compromise that can be good for the majority of people. But this is a perfect example of why that's a complete fraud. We've had the same argument for 20 fucking years, and it never changes. And it can't change. It's going to be the same debate and the same sides and the same argument over and over and over again, because the structure of power and the relationship between the media and the White House is such that these people are always going to feel more social connection with each other than they do with the American people and or anybody who makes less than six figures a year. So they're always going to have this jocularity and they're always going to want to be buddies with each other. And nothing like the invasion of Iraq or a white supremacist president is going to change any of that. But that's going to make them uncomfortable too. So they're always going to bring in these comics to try to push the boundaries. And then they're going to push too far. And then everything's going to snap into a frenzy to try to reestablish the boundaries so that we can maintain these convivial relationships. But then we have the argument first. And nothing can change that, because the social and economic structure of DC means that that relationship is always going to be there. And the debate is just a release valve. From a closed mechanism that will persist as long as the system does. And so there is no exchange of ideas. They're not building to anything. The debate isn't creating any movement, and it isn't shifting anything. It's just totally sterile. And it's the marketplace of ideas is as much as is like the free market. It's just this illusion of agency disguising a rigid, economically determined status quo, and that denies all your human freedom or even meaningful expression, because how is expression meaningful if you can't fucking affect anything?
Did either of you guys actually watch any of Hell Michelle Wolf's set?
No.
I saw her abortion joke, because some conservative cut it to be like, this is outrageous, and I was like, that's a pretty good joke. It was really not bad, but no, I'm not watching. I'm not going to watch the entire thing. That is, you know, everything gives you severe mental illness, but I prefer getting mental illness from stuff I like. And I just, I can't bring myself to do it. But yeah, this is the same stimulus and response pattern from these same bottom feeding creatures that we have always seen. And it's good because it, you know, you got on one hand, you have people who work for Donald Trump just saying that you cannot be rude to your political opponents and just no shame, no contradiction, nothing. And then on the other hand, like, people who now think that the height of civil disobedience is late night. This is the highest form of expression for them. But, yeah, I just, I mean, we did, though, we did get a good Mike Huckabee tweet because it was his daughter at stake there.
Mm-hmm.
It was his daughter, you know, being rotated on the open fire of Michelle Wolf's flaming barbs. And he goes, after seeing the young female hired to verbally bully anyone who worked for real Donald Trump, I now understand why eating Tide Pods is so popular.
Mm.
That level of vulgarity is best handled with a mouth washed out with soap. Have some more Tide Pods. Woo! He said Tide Pods!
Twice!
Boomers think Tide Pods are the funniest shit that has ever happened, ever. They cannot process an event now without relating it back to Tide Pods.
Well, they think it's like a perfect example of how dumb millennials are. But I mean, like, they're like, these kids are so dumb. They're putting condoms through their nose and eating Tide Pods because the internet told them to. And it's like, whereas back in my day, we were just breathing in the exhaust of leaded gasoline and dying in easily preventable car accidents.
Yeah, like every one of these motherfuckers didn't have a fucking pet rock.
Or a pet dog and, a pet and two big sons.
Well, I mean, so like most of this, you know, controversy or whatever is, you know, rotating around Sarah Huckabee Sanders, right? And, you know, did Michelle Wolf attack her looks, or was it too mean to go after someone who, you know, is that how shall I put this? Visually unappealing.
That's the thing, is that they really, the conservatives really gave away their own feelings about Sarah Sanders, because there really wasn't anything in the routine about her being unattractive or her weight or anything. They all added that afterwards.
How much do you want to bet that Donald Trump has called Sarah Huckabee Sanders a pig to her face?
Oh, of course he has. And that's the thing that really made me feel like my brain was melting. Because, yes, this is the same argument we've been having for literally 20 years now. But the fact that it's still happening when Donald fucking Trump is president is really what makes me feel like we can't be living in a real universe. And this has to be some sort of dark simulation.
He literally did the Carlos Mencia voice and wrist action to someone with cerebral palsy.
A journalist! The person that these idiots are supposed to think is one of them, right? Like the only people, these guys only care when one of their fellow fucking journalists gets in any way inconvenienced. And it was one of their precious tribe who got mocked. And yeah, he did a mocking arm gesture to a guy with cerebral palsy who was a journalist. He wasn't at the fucking thing. For the second year in a row, he wasn't at the Correspondents' Dinner. He was whipping up an arena full of swine, getting them to slap their hooves together about how Mexicans were going to come and destroy their lives because of a conspiracy between Democrats and the fucking press.
I mean, it's, again, like, this is so easy to state that, like, I almost hate saying it, but it should, like, you know, anyone who works in any presidential administration, much less the Trump administration, deserves to be bullied. They deserve to be insulted to their face. And more importantly than that, they should be made aware of the fact that they are loathed, that they are loathsome people, and that once you pass a certain threshold of both power and evil, it really doesn't matter how much someone insults you or how mean they are to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that being said, everyone who's like, oh, Republicans, you know, but you need a safe space now from a speech you don't like hearing about. And, you know, when you really hear what real comedy is about, you know, why you act afraid of jokes. I just got to say, actually, that's very good, because there is no such thing as anyone on the left or like liberal side of politics who would ever get angry about, you know, jokes or insults or comedy or anything like that. So they're all perfectly on absolutely 100% glacier firm ice getting riled up about this or pointing their finger.
Do you guys want to hear the Mike Huckabee parody song I wrote when I woke up today?
More than anything in the world.
Okay. Woke up this morning, made yourself a post. Your two sons are arguing over who could kill dogs the most. You got the one in a million. You got the shotgun Sean. Yeah, born under a blue moon, baby. You also eat a lot of moon pies. Yeah, woke up this morning. Tide Pods are funny as hell. Tide Pods. When you're 70 years old, that's the only joke you can tell. Do-do-do. And the entire Sopranos intro is him driving through different drive-thrus on his way to another drive-thru. I need a McMuffin before I get to the main drive-thru. You need a small meal to get to your bigger meal, or else you're going to be too hungry to think about what you're ordering for your big meal. Never order on an empty stomach. That's a country secret. Now, when you're ordering food, you're going to be ordering the whole menu unless you got a little appetizer on the way.
By the way, how could Michelle Wolf leave on the table the fact that Sarah Huckabee's brothers killed a dog for fun?
Yeah, you're not really being gloves off if you're not referencing the dog murders.
And, like, you know, she made fun of her smoky eyeshadow and people went apeshit. Dude, go to the dog material. Her fucking her idiot ogre brothers kill dogs for fun.
It's actually it's actually a very sad story about why Sarah Huckabee Sanders has that eye makeup. Mike Huckabee was doing one of those photo shoots where, you know, it's like, oh, my daughter's boyfriend is here to ask her to prom. Here are the rules. And he points a gun at him. But it was the makeup gun for The Simpsons, and it misfired, and it hit his daughter.
There's so much large sun material that you leave on. It's amazing. Those guys are astounding. You just put a picture of them up there, and then you just talk about them for 20 minutes, and you're done. You just imagine them sitting in a rumpus room, smashing fluorescent bulbs with a hammer, or like being like Homer and Barney and dressing in one giant pair of overalls and play a huge harmonica.
Yeah, then the op-eds after that would be like, there is nothing funny about the two large, simple-minded but cruel Huckabee sons bathing each other in a clawfoot bathtub every day. There's absolutely nothing funny about that.
But like, it's
not funny how they constantly seem to get trapped in barrels of molasses.
There's nothing funny about the fact that they just wear vests and no pants like Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, man, we found this week's Devil Sticks. Delights me for no reason.
I'm finding the cheat codes for Felix here.
Oh, man. That really should win an award at Yale.
Damn really right. Won. Are you listening, you Ivy League fucks?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what else to say about the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Well, I'll say one thing, which is that the only good thing to come out of this nattering is that maybe there will be a change in that they might get rid of it, which would be awesome. There's apparently, because...
I saw that they were considering a number of options to fix this problem, one of which was hiring a singer.
Good.
And if that's the case, can I put my vote in right now for Akon doing the No Label song at the next White House Correspondents' Dinner? And number two, hiring one liberal and one conservative comedian to sort of like have a response, you know?
Oh my God, the dueling banjos of awful, yeah, yeah, awful get, jokes? That's amazing. That would be fantastic.
You know, get Crowder in there.
Yeah, Crowder and... who the hell would be the lib?
Tom Myers.
Yes.
Tom Myers. Yeah, Tom Myers.
Oh, that would be amazing. I would actually watch that.
Felix, you made the joke that in an alternate universe, Tom Myers did host the Correspondents' Dinner, but it was when Hillary won, and he walked Bill after doing his notorious I'm signing up to be an intern joke. You know, the joke about eating Hillary Clinton's pussy. That's yeah, what I'm talking about.
Well, that would be like his triumph. That would be the end of the movie The King of Comedy. But yeah. No, if they had a singer, you could do The Weeknd, because all his songs are about having unsatisfying sex that makes you sad. And what is people in media's favorite thing to do?
I'll put it out there right now. Great White. It's the only choice. But the fact that they're doing this, like, oh, maybe we could do dueling piece. It's that even though this thing has outlived any usefulness and it's totally contrary to the entire idea of an adversarial media and hell, the fucking White House press corps, that whole, the idea of the press corps is stupid and doesn't make sense. Like, they shouldn't even have briefings, let alone have this circle jerk every year. But they can't stop doing it. They can't stop having their fun little thing that they do every year. And having all of the big important people there to hang out with them. Even if the president doesn't show up anymore. Trump hasn't been there. He's the first, like, he doesn't show up. What's the point of it if the president isn't there? But they're not going to stop. They'll bring in dueling comedians. They'll bring in some awful dude from The Daily Show and Dan Nanen to do dueling jokes before they get rid of the fucking thing.
I love that they're looking at it as a problem that needs to be solved, because the unbreakable first premise is like, well, we obviously need to have this big fancy party about the news.
We must have a news cotillion. We simply cannot cancel the news cotillion.
Do you guys remember? So like you brought up like that, like 10 years ago, Colbert did the Correspondents' Dinner like to yep. Bush in front of him. And I remember when that happened, I thought it was amazing. I thought it was like, I was over them. I thought Colbert killed it. I loved how offended everyone in the room was. I thought he did a great job. He really did cut pretty deep to Bush, like right in front of him. And circa 2006, I thought that was like a huge triumph for like, you know, what comedy stands for and like the ability of, you know, the clever and witty individual to speak truth to power. But, you know, and I still think that that performance holds up, but it's just like, we've come so far since then. I'm just like, I don't know how anyone can really get excited about the idea of like comedy speaking truth to power anymore.
Yeah, it's like, how? Where are you living? Remember when they roasted the shit out of Trump when he was at the Correspondents' Dinner, and they just shut him down when people thought he was being too uppity and he was gonna, oh, you, this guy thinks he can run for president on a platform of racism and nativism? We're gonna shut him down. And Obama did all those awesome jokes, and they cut to him looking like a tree stump in the audience. It worked. He was driven from the national stage after that. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to him, but yeah, he's hosting a show on QVC.
Well, this is the argument, of course, that conservatives make about the White House Correspondents' Dinner and Michelle Wolf, and they're packaging all of this in like the old same wine, old bottles. Of this idea of like, you know, this is just the elites who have contempt for us. And like, you know, we just feel so disrespected. This is why Trump is president. And I really feel like the liberal media, they fall for this shit every single time.
Well, because
they have to like have some agonized like self-reflection over like, oh, maybe we did go too far. Maybe we are just as bad as the, like you said, Matt, the people who filled the stadium at the exact same time to hoot and oink about immigrants and anything their daddy tells them.
But the thing is that they're right. They are an elite. They are separated from any kind of concept of an American people or anything like that. And that fills them with anxiety. The problem is, because of our idiot fucking polarized political system, all of that resentment just redounds to the benefit of a bunch of people who are able to pretend to be regular, but are in every sense as much a rapacious elite as all of these fucking media assholes.
This is unrelated, but I just found this out, guys. I thought I'd share it with you. Rosie O'Donnell wrote a poem about Joy Reid.
What?
Rosie O'Donnell wrote a poem about Joy Reid called Me and Joy Reid, and all I can think about is riding the bus with my sister Joy Reid.
Let's hear it.
It's really long.
Okay. God, well, damn, is it pro or anti? What's the basic stance?
I would assume it's pro.
I don't know, maybe not. Who knows?
It talks about how much he likes her and Rachel Maddow. And by the end, it just says, I will forever wonder what I could have done to hurt her. So I am truly sorry. So she's sort of being like, I don't know, I like you so much. Why do you hate me?
Oh, right. Because one of the things that people are finding in Joy Reid's old blog is her just being really mean to Rosie O'Donnell and supporting Trump. What, back when that was the big thing of Trump was his public feud with Rosie O'Donnell. She was like, can this hog shut up already? Trump is winning. He is hilarious. So that necessitates a response, I guess.
Yeah. Funny thing is, you know, we haven't talked about it since the last show, but the Joy Reid thing is also funny because it's like her defense that her blog was hacked has completely fallen apart. And all it took was her going on her show on Sunday, apologizing, but essentially saying, I don't remember writing these posts. I don't think they're me, but I understand if you think that they are, and that's okay. and then people were just like, okay, cool. Fuck.
I mean, yeah, it's incredibly stupid, but like, yeah, who gives a shit? It's more like, I mean, I think the Joy Reid news cycle was a case of everyone on every side of it feeling as though they accomplished something because they expended a lot of energy on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like the people who were like really pro Joy after her return to TV, after she crossed back into the Rubicon and took Rome, it was just like, man, we've all been through a lot together. It's like, no, you haven't. Everyone was just on the computer and they hate who they hated before and like who they liked before. Nothing changes. It's just a stupid exercise that we are going to forget by fucking Thursday. Yeah. There was no meditation. You're still going to like pull the shit on people you don't like. People who like who they like are still going to go, yeah, who gives a shit about stuff they pull on people they don't like? It's stupid. It's fucking stupid. It's completely pointless, but because you were just sitting in your car in neutral and slamming the accelerator, you feel like you went somewhere.
Excuse me. You say this. You say, oh, all of these people getting exercised online about politics. It's basically like being on a stationary bike and you think that you're driving across the country.
No, because you lose weight on a stationary bike.
but you're on a stationary bike, but you think that you're getting somewhere. You're actually traveling distance. Excuse me, but you can keep that shit. I am busy fighting for the future of the Republic by trying to slide into Kanye West's DMs with select passages from the Communist Manifesto. That's the future of politics, my friend.
Yeah, I guess that's the other major news of the weekend or entire week now that's just is designed to basically liquefy what's left in my brain. It's just like I can't engage with any of this. I mean, okay. I'm glad if there's anything productive to come out of this, I'm glad maybe we can now just be like, you don't have to, you can still enjoy the art of someone whose politics don't align with yours 1,000% perfectly.
But I've been having this conversation about Gallagher for years.
but that's not it. That's not what's going to come out of this.
No, yeah.
I mean, I actually didn't even remember this. Somebody pointed this out to me when this started happening, when Kanye started talking about Charlie Kirk and everything, and people were freaking out. Somebody found in my old tweets from 2014 when I said if I had one wish, it would be for Kanye to become a neo-reactionary. And you can see how old that was because I was using the phrase neo-reactionary. This is before alt-right was even a thing as a term. And the reason I said that, I mean, I didn't remember writing it, but thinking back, what I meant was how funny it would be to see people who have pinned their identity on the notion that their consumption choices are politically meaningful would square with one of their idols becoming reactionary. I thought that would be funny to watch. And it was funny for a while, but what's been really stunning and disheartening has been watching people confronted with this new political Kanye who's literally now hanging out with Charles fucking Kirk and tweeting Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. Instead of having that reasonable step back from investing in consumption with political meaning, have decided that the future of the Republic is at stake with who gets to influence Kanye. So it doesn't matter what Kanye says, I'll still enjoy the music or whatever. It's, oh shit, we've got to save Kanye. That's the only way we're going to get any political change.
So, well, this is perfect. This is perfect for the Kevin Phillips thesis on how our culture becomes more feudal geometrically every few years. Because his point when he wrote that in American Theocracy was that we talk about celebrities in very feudal terms and we see them in feudal terms, that they are exemplars of everything we believe in, these unelected divined monarchs who have been selected by God and are preordained and all of that. But now we're at the best part of monarchy, which is when you get a mentally infirm or child ruler, and it's a race to see who in the court can get the power.
Yep, it's amazing.
Kanye the Accursed.
Yep, just frantic segments of the court just dangling big turkey legs in front of his face.
I mean, the text message exchanges that he's been posting are hysterical because, like, I love that. I mean, it is so perfect that he'd become right-wing now because they are the group in our society that really, really loves the idea of being a free thinker. If by being a free thinker means you're unaware of basic American history as an adult.
I'm a free thinker, and by that I mean I'm terrified of everything.
Yeah.
I don't know what anything means. I don't believe that structures exist.
Yeah.
I don't believe the economy is a real thing. I think that we are just a collection of people with varying degrees of hustle and creativity, and that determines the social order. That's being a free thinker. And of course, a guy like that who's totally disconnected and insanely rich would be attracted to that point of view. But I think, I mean, some people are arguing about how sincere all this is, and I have no idea. But I think at least part of it is driven by his awareness that politics, in terms of entertainment right now, politics is the only game in town. Everything is filtered through politics. If you want to move the needle in terms of getting a conversation about your piece of art, it has to have a political valence or no one's going to care. Because that's all anyone fucking talks about now.
Well, he does have two new albums coming out. And I think that there's like, I think he's doing like an Andy Kaufman thing. I mean, like actually just like getting your photo taken with Charlie Kirk and being like, this is interesting.
That is one of the most outrageous stunts you can do.
I mean, like,
is pretending to be friends with Charlie Kirk.
Yeah.
Pretending to like him and like talking to him.
This does seem like some man on the moon type of shit. Like, I think maybe it started sincerely with the Candace Owens tweet, and then he saw how insanely that took off. And I think he's leaning into it. And I think he's going to be like, do this sort of right wing thing for a while as kind of spectacle and performance art and see where it goes.
Me and producer Chris Wade talked about this on a podcast that will be out Tuesday.
It's called And Introducing.
And Intro Pod. Yeah, we talked about this and we talked about it's conspicuous that Kanye hasn't said anything that he likes about Trump or concern. Like, he hasn't said, oh, I like the Muslim ban or I like the tax. But it's just like ideas, energy, power. And I don't want to preempt too much existing programming, but there is an ethos in Kanye West, if you followed him, that he can kind of meme something into happening, you know, similar to what alt-right people think they can do, where they post frogs in a rapidly changing country and eventually something happens and they go, oh, the frogs did it. But Kanye can actually shift culture. He's an incredibly dominant cultural force. And I think maybe for a guy like that, it's very appealing to think, what if I'm the guy who breaks liberal cultural hegemony?
Yeah.
Do you think he's thinking about it in those terms, though?
Kind of. You think he doesn't notice culture and doesn't notice that, like, entertainment is very – it's like a very similar liberal democratic line throughout. And he's like, yeah, what if I change this?
Yeah, no, I can see that.
You would go down in history. You'd be huge.
Well, that is what all of like the culture warriors and like people like Ben Shapiro are so invested in now. Like all the MAGA people, they have signs at Trump rallies to be like, Kanye, we love you or whatever, because they are very invested in the idea that someone of Kanye's pop culture cachet, which probably couldn't be any higher, has now decided to sort of say, hey, it's cool to be a right wing. It's cool to, you know, listen to Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro or whatever. Or, I mean, that's, I don't, Kanye hasn't said that, but they are, you know, interpreting it as such. And they're really, they've invested a lot in this. And I think it shows how kind of their disdain and hatred for pop culture betrays their own neediness and like the fact that they really are desperate for any kind of mainstream validation.
Well, yeah, because they, conservatives have all of the political power, but they want the cultural power. And liberals have all the cultural power, but they want the political power. And so it's this weird thing where
I'm not so sure about that second point.
Well, I don't think they would like it in the abstract on their own terms.
Yeah.
But I do think that which one is driven more crazy by what they don't have, it's definitely the conservatives not having the cultural power. Because as we talked about, like, and we've said before, they really are infuriated by the fact that Trump's victory has not redounded to them getting more personal respect in their own lives. And they're still getting shit on by TV and movies and artists and stuff.
I mean, they're getting shit on even harder than before because, like, now, like, liberal artists and musicians or whatever, many of them think it's their duty and responsibility or just their feeling to, you know, speak about what they hate about, you know, our government and our country right now, which is largely them. I mean, these people who like Trump and voted for him.
And they think they get scolded. A bunch of people said this about the fucking Correspondents' Dinner thing. They say, your efforts to try to use your position in a cultural authority to change, to shame conservatives or whatever. Well, that's why Trump won, and you're driving people into the arms of reaction. And it's not true, but it is useless. It is sad and fruitless. It is watching people who, you know, they talk about the people who, you only have a hammer, you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That's liberals right now. They have culture, and so everything, the only solution they have is by just slamming that fucking hammer in everyone's face. And it doesn't change anything, because the people who resent that, they're not on the fence. Nobody who is offended by something Michelle Wolf said about Sarah fucking Sanders is a persuadable voter. But it also doesn't get anything on your side. It doesn't change the dynamic in any way. So it's just this sad display of liberalism just basically flaunting the one thing it has at its disposal left anymore. And I guess just from a pure Schadenfreude perspective, it's sort of amusing watching conservatives gnash their teeth over their lack of that. And that's what makes that's why the liberal panic about Kanye is, because now they're thinking the dam is actually might break. And oh my God, what if this does change? And I think Felix is right. Is if that did happen, wouldn't Kanye love to go down in history as like the Rosa Parks of conservative cultural figures? The guy who would not be in the back of the liberal bus anymore?
Possibly. I mean, like, Matt, like what you were talking about, this sort of scolding about, you know, this is why we got Trump, or like this idea that it is the hegemonically liberal culture's responsibility to speak to, or, you know, give a pat on the head or recognize or see in whatever terms you want to do it. The people that they hate so much and who hate each other so much, like, i.e. the Trump voter. This reminds me of an exchange I had this weekend with Atlantic Magazine's resident practitioner of this very style of
argument. Oh, my God.
Connor Friedersdorf.
That fucking dork.
And this was over the John McNaughton paintings. John McNaughton, of course, is like the official art of a painter of MAGA America. And he came out with another idiotic painting this weekend. His last one was the one of my personal favorite, is the one of Trump sort of like with a tear, like sort of cleaning off a ragged American flag that he picked off the a football field. And this new one is him on a park bench in what looks like a cruising scene, teaching like a young college guy, a very handsome young college man, about how to fish or some shit like that. And people were making fun of it. And Connor's point was like, I don't know if, like, you know, I think liberals need to ask themselves a question of whether this, like, you know, redounds to their benefit, like, to be, like, do this in-group mocking of, like, you know, the art of the other side or whatever. And I responded to him, you hate this kitschy bullshit too, shut the fuck up. Because there's no way he actually likes John McNaughton's art or the people who fucking, you know, coo over it. But, like, it's just virtue signaling from some weird right-wing centrist point of view. And I think my only response to that is it is not politically productive to kiss the asses of, like, the dumbest, worst people this country is capable of producing. And, like, I think people need to stop fooling themselves about that, whether it's the Correspondents' Dinner or culture or whatever. Because guess what? These people, even though they're not necessarily in charge of culture, are united in their spite and in-group loathing of liberals. And it, you know what? It works pretty fucking well for them getting what they want done. So I think we should stop pretending to, I don't know, like follow these little breadcrumbs all the time or pretend that there's always some honorable, interesting, respectable point to be made. The entire conservative movement is Donald Trump. It's always been like this. It always will. It's morally hideous and corrupt, and these people deserve nothing but spite, and you really cannot be mean enough to them in
because,
any kind of public or private setting.
Because
I mean, like, the goal should be to defeat them politically and make it so that they cannot enact their will at even a local or like dog catcher level. That should be the goal of everyone. That's the problem we're all facing. Because everything else is window dressing.
You will get no you will get no credit for humoring their shitty art. Or like Maggie Haberman did a whole thing making mea culpas and fretting about how mean everyone was to Sarah Sanders. Do you think that's going to stop Trump the next time he wants to call Maggie Haberman a dumb whore, which he's done like 50 fucking times since becoming president? No. T-minus like 2 days until he does it again. Nothing you can say to them will change anything because they're driven by a bottomless pit of resentment. These people, for the most part, what do they hate in the world? They hate liberals they've never met. They hate Mexicans who are stealing jobs they would never do. They don't have any black people who live in neighborhoods that their family hasn't lived in several generations. It's all a constructed resentment fantasy in their head. Nothing you can do is going to interfere with that. Nothing is going to make them rethink what is the primal driving force of their entire politics.
And it's just like, it's so weird to read shit from like the journalists or whatever who are like, you know what? Say what you will about comedy, but like, you know, bullying is not okay. say what you will about Trump, but like bullying is not okay. And I just like I really have to question the mentality of someone who really thinks that they can or should be objective about any of this shit. Like you must know what the Trump administration is doing and what they stand for.
And or the idea that you can bully them.
Yeah.
How do you fucking bully the fucking White House press secretary who goes in front of them 4 days a week and humiliates them and insults their intelligence? How the fuck do you bully someone in that position?
Have you guys noticed that Donald Trump is always wearing long sleeves because he's cutting?
You're so mean to me, folks. I can't handle it anymore.
Push me to the edge. All my friends, they're dead.
Folks, Robert Smith, he's got a lot of smart things to say. You should listen to him. The world, it's a vampire, folks.
Well, I do like that the entire past week, the thing that dominated is, you know, was the Daily Show woman too mean, or was it the bravest act of resistance at the party for the roller backpack guys? You know, can we help Kanye, who, like, can we make this man who's been having a mental breakdown for 4 years straight have a rational political thought? We need to make it happen. And, you know, Netanyahu just went up to the UN today and gave a presentation.
Liar.
About the Iran nuclear deal, urging sort of a repeat of his presentation last time.
Where he had the giant time. Bomb the with the giant candlestick bomb, and like the yeah. big round bomb with a candlestick top.
Yeah. This is all dog and pony bullshit that goes on. And there is a real horrifying thing in the background. But what I think is interesting about that is that's as much of a dog and pony show. I don't actually think that Israel really wants to go to war with Iran.
This so what are they trying to do?
Because our concept of war now is a trade show, right? Our concept of war is a trade show where every country gets to show off the military hardware they specialize in. You know, every time that Israel hits Syria like they did this past week, the Russians get to go, sounds like we can finally sell you S-300 and S-400 anti-aircraft batteries. We've sold them to everyone who fucking hates each other. We've sold them to Armenia and Azerbaijan at the same time. We've sold them to Saudi Arabia. We're trying to sell them to Qatar. I don't think that Netanyahu legitimately wants to have a ground war with Iran because it would be fucking disastrous. But, you know, he wants more military assistance, or he wants more, you know, money for whatever proxy conflict like they have done in Syria. And we all now play the same game, the same trade show. That's what our culture war is the same thing. No one actually wants to win the culture war. None of these fucking people do. But they want to climb this ladder of escalation that we do in Ukraine and Syria to sell higher tiers of weapons. The, you know, greater stakes that you say the culture war is, the closer you are to culture World War III, you get to sell your S-300 or S-400s or your version of American TOWs or anti-air missiles or fucking whatever, which is, you know, more cable news appearances or more, you know, more book deals or whatever. It's the same thing where we're on the we want to go to the exact verge of a catastrophic full conflict. But just before that, just so we could sell the right armaments to each other.
Well,
everything is exactly as sick in the same fucking way. It's never going to get better, but we're going to have a Twitch channel soon.
I don't think Netanyahu wants to tangle with Iran. I don't think he would mind if we did. I think that'd be fine with him if we shot a lot of missiles and risked lives going and fucking with Iran.
I don't think he necessarily wants us to have a ground war with Iran.
I mean, necessarily, but I think some bombing, some fucking their shit up, some degrading capacities, as they like to say. Yeah, I think he'd like to do that. But I think you're right that all of these conflicts, and this goes back to the thing about how all of this marketplace of ideas is just a sterile cycle that never builds to resolution the way that dialogue is supposed to, is because all of these conflicts about culture and politics and foreign affairs, balance of power, they can never be resolved, because to resolve them would be to break out of the status quo that benefits the people who are perpetrating them. And that's too terrifying to contemplate, because they don't know they'd end up on top of that. And any politics
war is
that
the
wants,
war is rolling the iron dice, as Bismarck said.
Anybody who wants to really challenge any of these prevailing hegemonies is going to have to deal with the fact that you can't deal with these issues on the terms that have been laid out, because they are not designed to resolve a problem. They're not designed to fix anything. They're designed to continue a status quo, to drag the corpse of the guy from Weekend at Bernie's across the fucking beach until he dissolves. And until there's been enough of a hyper extraction of resources that the people at the top of it can survive the coming collapse in their fucking bunkers and seasteads. And you have to point past this status quo and past this just dead, sterile fucking debate on all these issues and say, fuck, I don't even know. Because to even imagine it is to move beyond everything that we have generally understood to be what politics means.
Right. And the culture war works around those same points of what does it look like beyond this? I can't conceive of it. I know that we're all fucking sick of this, and it feels like it's tearing at the seams because it is dumber than it has ever been, I feel like, in my life, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, easily.
But what comes after? What comes after? I don't know. What comes after the proxy war as weapon sales trade shows? That is the meta game of international politics. I don't know what comes after any of these, because as I said, the meta for all these games is to go right to the verge of full conflict and never get there, because you are only selling the escalation and hinging that you won't get total disaster. Hinging it on these apparatuses of millions of people and them making no human error.
Yeah.
Well,
fuck. Hey,
again, Twitch stream coming.
Entertainment is still available, people.
Yeah.
Answers? None of those, but dick jokes? Sure, we got them.
I mean, I guess, yeah, the only difference is that people would like to win the Empire Wars, but I don't think anyone wants to win the culture war.
Well, a culture war that isn't on these terms isn't one that's generated by capitalism the way that it exists now. I mean, I was just thinking about how the other stupid argument I saw being recapitulated on the internet this weekend was because the New Yorker wrote a review of the new Avengers movie, and of course it was very dismissive of the film and said that it was kiddie bullshit that was stupid and incoherent. And this led to a million nerds shitting themselves at how elitist they are. But Well, why the hell would the New Yorker write a review of a fucking kiddie movie? I mean, it's a huge cultural moment. And all culture now, the big ones, I mean, everything's been siloed off into niches. The big ones left are the things that are at the lowest common denominator and can guarantee the biggest return because of how much money is put into them. And New Yorker knows that when they write a review, especially if it's dismissive, it's going to get linked to a million times by outraged nerds. And that just means that this, as long as capital is dictating what our cultural expectations are, and you know, entertainment is like any other industry, is that a big investment requires a big return. So not only do movies that are cost a lot have to have a pre-existing intellectual property that people know about, so you can ensure a base level of interest, but Marvel has taken the next step, and with the Extended Universe, created movies that only reference themselves and that sell each other and that never end. No movie can end. It has to sell the next one because the next one's going to cost even more than this one did, and it has to therefore guarantee an even higher return. And so, but because this is all built on the framework of niche interests, things that used to be for nerds like comic books, people have this personal commitment to it because they think geek culture still exists when these things are making $250 billion a day. And so every fucking time, this thing's been going on for at least 10 years since basically the first comic book movie came out, the nerds and the snobs fight about how you're being elitist, and they say, how could I be elitist when this movie is the most this is the sum total of culture. And they can't resolve it because the content is dictated by the nature of the economics of entertainment. So they just argue for a while, and then it goes away, and then another piece of shit slides down the fucking pipe, and they have another argument. And it can never resolve. And they're all like that, because the underlying premise of the market is dictating these dynamics. And so we can only eternally recur, basically, until the resources that fuel it run out. And then nobody will be arguing about anything anymore except that the last can of beans in the gutted Kroger. Except for the fucking Washington, D.C. media, who will be in the burned-out shell of the museum sacrificing virgins to the god of decorum.
The newsium. I mean, to close out the show, because, you know, lest we be accused of being too pessimistic, Felix alluded to it, I'd like to maybe chart a new course for like a different, better culture that is a way out of the trap that we're all viciously ensnared in. Of course, our Twitch stream. This is sort of a brainchild of you know, Felix and Virgil, of course, the Yale-approved game masters. But, you know, I'm into it. What are some of the things that people can expect from the Chapo Twitch project, as yet to be named?
Tentatively, my basic ideas, our basic ideas, I am going to have a series where I play through single-player games. Obviously, we're going to start with the Metal Gear series, but I'm also going to play through my favorite single-player games of the early to mid-2000s, like Max Payne 1 and 2, etc., and talk about their significance culturally. But also, for the people who like what is now the biggest genre on Twitch, and I am to be the James Cameron of this genre, where my art transcends the tawdry medium, my Fortnite show with my Fortnite friends. We will be doing it.
I hope to be playing Fortnite for the first time ever on your guys' stream.
You will be a guest player on Team Fuck You Mean. Also, Virgil had a terrific idea of him playing Crusader Kings with Matt. And I had an idea having Matt play Assassin's Creed to get Matt at both the abominable gameplay and bad history.
That does look like a terrible game. That'd be interesting. I do want to play one of those super complicated strategy games with Virgil, because the context seems kind of interesting, but then I just look at the screen and there's so much stuff on it that I get a headache and I say I could never do this. So allowing him to do all of the actual button pushing while I guess kind of watch would be kind of fun.
I was also interested in, you know, putting my little spin on the Twitch medium and finally doing a cooking show for you guys. I don't know if you, the listener, are aware, but I'm a something of an amateur chef myself. I've been known to cook a few things, and I've been thinking of doing a sort of a combination instructional cooking show and then a dinner party live Twitch stream. So you can, you know, berate me for cooking and then berate me as I'm eating food.
Will has every single item that Megan McArdle has ever advertised from the from that catalog.
I do not have even close to 1/1000th of the things that Megan. But Matt, you're just impressed that I have like a whisk or an immersion blender.
I have both of those, sir.
Okay, all right. I don't have anything like too fancy. I just, you know, I have a rice cooker. I mean, what do you want from me? That's not like a ludicrously extravagant, you know, kitchen item.
I'm mostly fascinated by the fact that you have a literal meat cleaver.
That is true. I do have a cleaver, but you know that's good for cutting up chickens.
Have you ever used it?
Yeah, of course.
All right, it seems cool. I want one.
It's low tech. You know, gets the job done. Well, guys, once again, congratulations to you, Felix and Virgil, on winning your Yale University Humorist of the Year awards.
Yale Daily Record Humorist of the Year.
Yale Daily Record Humorist of the Year. Any other Ivy League schools out there or August institutions looking to give an award to someone you know who deserves it? Will Menaker. Will Menaker.
You're no interest in the Ivies. Oxbridge only for me.
Well, guys, next time maybe we'll be in the same room. But it was good again to do this classic Chapo material with you, back the way it used to be. Okay, till next time, guys.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. It's producer Chris here, talking from the edit. Just because it's been mentioned twice now, I thought I'd give a formal plug to the podcast Felix and I did. The show is called And Introducing, and it's a podcast about writing about music. We usually cover artist memoirs or articles, but this week we took a look at Kanye West through his tweets. So if any of Felix's discussion in the middle of this episode about Kanye's weird flirtation with conservatism or his ability to move culture or his place in recent pop culture history or just being dumb online interests you, please check it out. You can find us at soundcloud.com/and-intro-pod or on Twitter at andintropod or and introducing on iTunes or any podcast app. I'm going to try to get that out later today on Tuesday afternoon or evening, so go find it. And a big shout out to Brendan for editing so many of these classic style eps. The audio quality and the sync has been really driving me crazy. Okay, thanks. Bye, everybody.
Whoop-dee-scoop. Scoop-dee-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-dee-poop. Poop-dee-scoop-dee-scoop-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-whoop-poop. Poop-dee-dee-whoop-scoop. Poop.